Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am Sandy Hunt, the club's personal growth member and your program coordinator for this event. It is my pleasure to extend a welcome to everyone. We also welcome our listening audience and invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now is my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Dr. Joan Steigenger. Dr. Steigenger is a clinical sports psychologist, a member of USOC's Registry of Sports Psychology, and an award-winning author of Sisterhood in Sports, How Female Athletes Collaborate and Compete. And her book is on sale out in the lobby, and she is willing to autograph it for you. Dr. Steigenger's book has won several prestigious awards. Luckily, I got to talk to her early and hear all about it, including honorable mention in the Women's Issues category of the IndyFab Book of the Year Awards, as well as winner of the Sports category in the International Book Awards. She also won the Sports category of the National Indie Excellence Awards and the Beverly Hills Book Awards. So, I would like to take this opportunity and have you join me in welcoming Dr. Steigenger.
Can everyone hear me? Okay. Welcome, all of you. I have been a psychologist for licensed psychologist. I've had my PhD for 30 years. And I've always been interested in women's issues and the sisterhood and the bonding of women in particular. I wanted to start with this slide because I just turned 60 in January, and to celebrate it, I asked my husband for a present. I asked him to crew for me at a 50K, which I ran in the shadow of Mount Hood 2 weeks ago and finished. And also was the first and only 60-year-old. So I have an engraved mug commemorating my first 50K as a 60-year-old. And so one of the things that you'll see I talk about is it's never too late to succeed. The book that I wrote was 20 years in the making, and many inceptions, and it talks about women as well as just female athletes. So if I can get this clicker, oh, here we go. So I'm going to be asking for participation from you, and I'm going to invite questions as they come along with this group. And I was talking a minute ago about my interest in women's uniqueness, because one of the things that really drew me to this whole subject of women and relationships in particular was because, for those of you who are older in the room, you might remember the book Women Who Love Too Much. Does anybody remember that book? And what disturbed me about the book was it made the focus of women on emotional part of relationships somehow wrong or pathological. And it was at a time when codependency was the cool thing, that you were like over caretaking your man and all that kind of stuff. But one of the things I saw in my practice, because I've been seeing athletes since the early 90s, even though I was trained in the early 80s, I was engaged in some of my own stuff and waited until I was really kind of taken care of before I got into working more with athletes. But one of the things that I noticed clearly early on in my practice was most of my female clients focused on relationships from an emotional perspective. And in fact, then as I saw more female athletes, the same thing happened. And I kept arguing, and I wrote my first proposal for the book in 1997, and I kept arguing with people about that there can't be wrong. There's got to be something there psychologically that makes us different and unique. And so I actually got interested in the topic of female athletes and relationships in the mid-90s and wrote my first proposal in 1997, and I took it to American Psychological Association, and of course it was like reject. Everybody took it, but 30 people rejected it. So I'm not a quitter. I'm very big on people persisting and to achieve their dreams. And so one of the things that I've done now in the book that's kind of nice now is about the time, how many people are familiar with the book, The Female Brain? And if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it because it was a turning point for women of somebody finally addressing a neuropsychiatrist the fact of how our brains work. We have different strengths, and it works differently than men's. So it's not like this thing of we should be different. We are different. And so it was exciting because I was very able. I interviewed in the last few years about 90 women and a few men of all ilks in terms of from recreational up to pros, to pioneering women. And in my circle of sports psychology, because I'm very involved in the Association of Applied Sports Psychology, people really helped me out with this book. They helped me find people to interview. They helped me to find situations to talk about it. And so one of the things that's a keynote and a theme through this book is that women and relationships are always have an element of intimate and emotionality in them. That's our nature of how we approach relationships. It's not dysfunctional. It's how our brains work. Our brains...
Yay!
Exactly. And, you know, so relationships discussions are central, of importance to females. How many people find it's really important to talk to your female friends about certain things that you don't talk to your male friends about? Okay. And how this comes into play is in groups of women and in sports girls, there's different ways to approach girls and women in terms of how we really reach out to you. And the relationship discussion needs to come up, I think, more in work. It needs to be acknowledged. It definitely comes up more in sports. I worked with the San Francisco State softball team for the last 2 years, and you'll see a picture of us. And one of the things that we always did was we really talked in circles. We talked together. I provided guidance, but there was always a lot of give and take in terms of our meeting together. And the other aspect that I think is really critical is talking. We need to hear things a lot more than men. How many men do you know pay more attention to the nonverbal than the verbal? I only see one hand. Anybody else? Oh, yeah. Okay. But one of the things the research shows that's very interesting, there was some discussion that we use more words in a day than men, and there's been some mixed results on that one. But the one thing that they agree with in the research is that female athletes talk much more about relationships than men do. And you will see this, where'd my clicker go? There it is. Talking over business. How many people talk with their females colleagues over business and try to really work together in doing that? Yeah. This is myself with San Francisco State. Notice how I have all the girls. We're in a circle because girls operate in a circle, and men tend to operate more in a hierarchy. And oftentimes, as this coaching friend of mine, Ken Grace, who's at Chabot College, says, yeah, they get on the ladder and they try to kick the last guy off. He works a lot with female athletes. So how do our brains work? Our brains and our strengths in our brains, it's our strengths in our brains that we need to access more and not feel like we have to suffocate that. One of the things about our brains is we have a need for more social, emotional types of connections. We thrive on one-on-one relationships and groups of women together. Empathy and intuition is more in our brains. It's a very strong feature of our brains. And compassion. The peer group, collaboration, camaraderie, and bonding. You see that? I think in the workplace it needs to happen a lot more. I have an office down at Bush and Montgomery. So over the years, unfortunately, I've seen a lot of young women, not so young women, who have female bosses that really aren't operating like the brains actually operate and don't help people progress. And I say, well, why not? Because if we're all striving towards success, we can help each other out. I think one of the reasons my book was successful was because of all the incredible networking I did with women who turned me on to this person to interview, people who were like really hard to access. I mean, there was a couple of people I had to interview via the internet because they're so much in demand, but they were willing to take the time to do that and re-interview, actually. And so it was just this, and it was fun. I mean, one of the things, particularly in sports, I have to say, if women and girls aren't having fun, they're not going to want to do it. So if they get a coach, Marty, right? Yeah, hi, Marty. It's an old ultra running friend. if they get a coach that doesn't really encourage the positive relationships and get to know the girls on the team, they're not going to perform as well. Or I had a coach, a female coach, when I was speaking to a university down in San Diego, who said she purposely pitted players against each other. Now, how is this helpful? How is this helpful for them developing as young women? I was kind of speechless, and at the time I really didn't know how to respond other than say, well, that's not really the most healthy or best response, best action to teach these girls. And, of course, people got mad at me, but that's the way I felt. The fun quotient is important. No. Okay. I'm not used to using a clicker. So I found this little diagram of a brain that I thought was kind of funny. So I thought I'd share it with you guys. As you'll see, it talks about shopping and loving kids and loving chocolate. I mean, it's just fun. How many people have felt fat in their life? Big issue for women is 80% of American women are dissatisfied with their bodies. And the other interesting part is 2% of women actually have bodies that can look like supermodels. So I think the fact they're showing more well-rounded women in ads and in shows is very helpful to all of us. So there's Allison Dunlap is a world champion cross-country mountain biker, and she said, I think, my favorite quote in my book that's also in the back that says, women are not small men. And I think one of the things we try to do, both in personal and sports, is we try, we're all, how many people have heard someone say to either at work or in sports, why can't you be more like a man? Anybody have an experience like that? Nobody. Okay. Well, I heard this. Oh. Well, there was actually, I was amazed as I was talking to a woman at an event we have that is Memorial Weekend, and she was a rower, an 8 boat. And the coach said to the girls, when they were being emotional about something about their particular training session, was she said, he yelled, he looked at all of them and he said, why can't all of you be more like men? So I think that's a big issue in sports, is one of the things that happens. So I have 3 questions for the audience. The first one is, how important are relationships to you all? Crucial. Who said that? Okay, can you say more about that?
Meaningful relationships makes that even better. But relationships are everything to me. Mm-hmm. They're everything to me. Okay. I don't think I'd function very well without healthy ones.
Okay. And what do you consider a healthy one?
That's a whole nother conversation. Well, there's functional and dysfunctional, so it's trying to make them all functional. That's tough sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? How important relationships to you? Is this group shy? Debbie Shea, I know you're really brave back there.
They're everything. I think relationships are everything, and I think that the most important thing about relationships, whether they're your best girlfriends or men or brothers or sisters or family, is that they're honest. Mm-hmm. I think that's the critical part, but yeah, relationships are everything.
And growth inducing. I think there's a quote by a poet, David White, where he talks about that whole issue of, you know, the relationships you have should help you feel bigger as a person and be excited when you grow and develop and do new things. Now, any athletes in here? Debbie, yeah, go ahead.
I have one more thing to say about that.
Okay, sure.
I think that if you have your healthy relationships make you a better person.
Okay.
So it just, you know, reinforces your position on anything.
Right, yeah. How about detailed communications? How many people do better when they, like, if they don't understand something, have it explained to them? How many women in the room are helped when somebody explains something in more detail they don't understand? Yeah. This is one of the biggest complaints I get with adolescent athletes, is that the coaches just say, go do that. You know, go pitch better. And they, like, don't give any explanation of what to do. And girls really need actually more detailed information a lot of times, because that's kind of what women are like. And what about, how many people feel like they have communities here in the room, of friends, of activities? Because community really helps us grow and develop, and I love this quote by Victoria Principal. When women work together, it's a bond unlike any other. And one of the interesting things that I found in looking for pictures of working women, even though I put, I subscribe to a photo service, even though I put working women, there would be men showing up in the pictures. And then I put, you know, no men. And men would still show up in the pictures. I even called their phone number and said, you know, I'd really like to have some pictures of working women, and they still sent pictures with men in them. So I think it's interesting because so we can't separate that out. And I think particularly in work, it's one of the places where women can come in and really be powerhouses and contribute in a different way. And sometimes people in my book think I'm trying to make it soft for women, and I'm not at all. All I'm trying to do is say we have these qualities, and they need to be acknowledged and worked with, and then we're going to thrive that much more. So, what is success to women? Well, one of the things that I find with women is one of the hardest issue that women struggle with is the issue of confidence, particularly in work and in sports. And you will talk to a lot of athletes, and that is really a big issue, particularly for like adolescent girls. How many people feel confident 50% of the time? Okay. How many people feel confident 70% of the time? How many people feel confident 80% of the time? How many people feel confident 90% of the time? That's when we start to drift off. And how do you see the confidence is a really important issue for women. And when I talk about success for women, the values we have tend to be more relationship-oriented and more helping-oriented of others. And these are just a few of them. And in fact, I have handouts for you about confidence strategies. And I will get these to you right now. Because in the handouts of this is the confidence one. In the confidence list that I'm handing out to you, it suggests specific ways to help build your confidence. Because if you have more confidence and you get more capable and the world rewards you for what you do, then you're going to feel more successful. So my question for you is, what is success to you? How about this gal here with the purple with the sunglasses on top of her head? What is success to you?
Success is generally achieving what you set out to do.
Mm-hmm. So is it externally oriented?
Typically, yes.
Okay. How about the woman with the blue sweater behind, in two rows behind you? What is success to you?
I think having a strong relationship, not only with yourself, but with your outer self, with you, how you present yourself to others.
Okay. Okay. How about this blonde over here on this side? Hi. What is success to you?
I don't know if you can answer it in one way. It depends on what aspect of your life you're speaking of. But for me, success is achieving the goal that I've set for myself, if it's in my career, if it's in my personal life, baby step. I try not to set goals that are unachievable because I know that, like New Year's resolutions, for example, I just don't set because I think it just really sets yourself up for some disappointment later on the road. But
what if you achieve them, though? What if you set some up and you achieved them?
Well, then that's good. But I'd rather set something up that's realistic. I mean, for example, my career, you know, I have certain progress and steps I want to see and a sort of a timeline in mind. And as you kind of tick those boxes, it gives you a little boost of confidence. And also having relationships, valuable relationships, both personally and professionally, I think are a huge part of my success as a person, because having that network,
mm-hmm.
that strong network helps you. That helps you grow personally and professionally. Without a network, you're kind of on your own island.
Okay. I see a hand way back there.
I was just thinking about this last night, actually. So I think as we continually evolve as human beings, my definition of success changes a little bit. And I change a little bit day by day, moment by moment. So in that process of becoming and being, for me, it's just really listening to who I am and understanding, having a deep understanding of who I am, and that getting that clarity, and then accepting that and being that.
Okay.
So that to me is success on being.
Okay. Okay, so Lao Tzu said, I translated it into woman talk, she who knows others is clever. She who knows herself is enlightened. Now, one of the things is, see, this woman is crossing the finish line. Well, that's not literal. Come on. But the point of this is that we can all, whatever our goals are, we can all finish across and feel like we've won. And I think one of the other things that I actually haven't mentioned in the slides that I think is important for women is to not be afraid to take risks, because we don't take risks near as much as men, and we need to take, it's helpful for us to grow to take risks. I mean, I remember coming out of grad school thinking, oh God, what am I going to do now? Not that I wasn't establishing my business, but I need, you know, I'm a very super goal-oriented person, but it's also a mental and a physical thing for me. And particularly mental. I mean, that was one of the things that was significant about finishing this 50K 2 weeks ago, was that my mind hadn't been that strong in a long time around physical stuff. And I was at full stride at mile 5 and took a header and landed in all these roots. I cracked a rib and kept going. And of course, my husband, he tells a funny story that there was a whole group of young people behind me, and one of the young men who didn't stop went ahead and said, oh, this woman fell back there, and described me. And of course, I was the oldest one in the group. And my husband goes, well, he says, yeah, she fell. I didn't think she was going to get up. And my husband says, well, did you help her? And apparently not. He was one of the people that kept going. But we can all cross these finish lines that are important to us. It doesn't have to be one person. I mean, that's the one great thing I have to say about running longer distance over 60 now, is there's not many of us who do that sort of thing. So it just puts it in perspective. You know, when I remember the process of the book is when my proposal really, my actual agent rejected my proposal 2 years prior. And I got somebody who really helped me organize, because I tend to, like, that's why I do PowerPoint. It keeps me on track. But I can get sidetracked. And so my book coach really helped me get organized. And he said to me, oh, she's really hard. She's a really tough coach. And I'm like, she is? She was, because she was perfect for my thing. So when he came back at me, I'd sent out the next proposal 2 years later, and I'd sent it to like 10 people, and a couple of people had emailed me, said they got it. It was a Tuesday afternoon. And I'm driving to work on Wednesday down here. I have an office in the financial district. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I haven't heard from Andy. The next thing I know, the phone rings. And it's Andy saying, I want you. Forget anybody else. I want you. So to me, just getting an agent was like a success. It was a huge thing. It was hard. I tried for years to get agents or publishers or whatever. And then when we actually got a contract, that felt like another success. So I think as we take on bigger projects, whatever they are that are right for us that kind of stretch our limits, it's important that we reward ourselves along the way, that we're not afraid to try new things and go outside the box a little, because that helps also feel happier with yourself and developing who you are as a person. Okay, I want to play a little game now, and I'm going to pick on random people to answer this. So you're going to have to put your thinking caps on. It's called Two Truths and a Lie. Can everybody see it back there? I want you to say what your overall level of success is on a scale of 1 to 10. And overall means, you know, work, personal, and sports if applicable. The second question will be, are you more successful in personal, work, or sports? And then I want you to share with the group two truths and one lie about your level of success. So people can, maybe on the back of the handout I gave you, you could scribble some stuff down if you don't have any paper. And I'll be asking people each question, asking the group each question at a time. So it's two truths and a lie, all about success. And some of you who've been shy will be asked to speak up and share with the group. Yeah, well, an example is I feel on a scale of 1 to 10, my success is about an 8. I feel more successful in some ways in work or sports, but not unsuccessful in personal. It's just not as successful. And two truths. I am... at the pillar of my writing capability, my career is at the end, and I love running long distance. Yeah, so my career is not really at the end. That's the lie. I mean, I have the energy. I'll keep going for 20, 25, 30 more years. No problem. I have a father who's 99 and still with it. And his mind was sharp as a tack until like maybe 2 years ago. I understand. He's just wearing down a little bit now. So I want you to think about how you, honestly... Let's just start with the first question, and then we'll take a minute for the third one. Okay, what do people feel is your overall level of success on a scale of 1 to 10? I'm calling on the gal with the khaki shirt.
I will say 3.5, because I think that's age appropriate.
Okay. Okay. How about somebody else? How about the gal on the end of the row here?
Oh. I was thinking more of a 7 for me. I was not thinking about my age. But for work, okay, like an 8. Mm-hmm. And... if I think about life, I see it three different components. One, work, personal, and personal relationship, and also growth, internal growth. Mm-hmm. So if I average that around, maybe 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, how about this lady here with the striped shirt right here?
I'd say about an 8.
Okay. Okay, let's see. Way in the back, just in front of you, JP, the gal with the light blue top.
I would also say about a 7.
Okay.
For all of those areas, okay, kind of averaged out.
Okay, now let's go to the second question. Do you feel you are more successful in personal work or sports if applicable? And I know it is applicable at least with a couple of people here. Yes? What's your name?
My name's Judith.
Hi, Judith.
Hi. So personal, I just recently got married, and I have a great relationship with my husband. But I don't know, the whole friend thing doesn't seem to, is not as successful as I would like.
Okay.
And I keep reaching out to people, but it doesn't seem to be reciprocated. So work, I achieved a lot of success in work. There was, I mean, it wasn't where I was heading, but it was given to me. Mm-hmm. Although most recently, I work in hospital environment, mm-hmm, which is mostly women, and you, mm-hmm, haven't addressed this yet, but I hope you do. Gossip, mean-spirited women, the whole tear you down attitude. So while I was busy trying to build other people up, there was a group of about 5 mean women who were trying to pull me down, and it got to be insufferable. And as far as sports, all of my sports have been individual sports, so I've done really well. I'm a third-degree black belt. Mm-hmm. I used to run marathons. I used to actually win in my age group in shorter races. So when it's up to me, it's great. And I haven't really engaged in team sports.
Okay.
So that's great. My story.
Okay. How about Marty? You knew I was going to put you on the spot at some point.
Well, I retired in 1989, so I really feel there are 2 parts to this.
Okay.
And when you say overall, I don't know how meaningful it is. It was like 2 most of the time while I was working.
Okay.
And I'm much happier now.
Mm-hmm.
I have better personal relationships. I don't have success. I'm free. I'm happier. I relate with different kinds of groups, you know, right, swimming, running, senior center. Oh, excuse me. Whatever. But I don't think I've been a great success in personal relationships. I know I haven't been a great success, but I'm enjoying what I have. Okay. I sit in the park and talk with the other old ladies up in the park. Everybody has a dog, and I love the dogs. Sports was my only, if you call it, I never thought of it. I've got to tell you something. I went to New Zealand to compete in the Masters Games back in the 70s when I was in my 40s, I believe. I didn't start running until I was in my 40s. And you pay to enter. You pay to run, you know, to register, to run in what events you want. Yeah. And I got to the stadium, the Queen Elizabeth II Stadium, and the sign said, athlete's entrance. And I walked around to find the one for me. And the other entrance was where you went and sat up in the stands. And my God, I'm an athlete. And it hit me just like that, because it was the worst thing I was in school. Yeah. I couldn't throw or catch, you know,
right,
but I can run.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, you take it where you can find it.
Well, like I recently told my father, who was a 75-year golfer, I didn't realize years ago I tried out in high school, the late 60s, for the first cross-country team in the high school. And I qualified for the team. I also was playing badminton and tennis on those teams. And I qualified for cross-country. I was so excited. And then I was informed by my mother that I couldn't play it because it was unladylike. And the interesting thing is, all these years I was under the mistaken impression that it was my mother that had put the kibosh on that. And I was having dinner with my father in April. I was up in, he lives in the Portland area, and we were talking, and he gets on these little rants because he's so confused now. And he started going on and on about how bad running is for you. And like, I don't understand why you run. It's going to shorten your life. I mean, and it was like, wow, where did that come from? I never had heard that clearly from him. And then what I realized, and, you know, I said to him, oh, come on, Dad, you got golf. I got running. They're different things. I mean, golf makes you happy or made you happy. Running makes me happy. And then he was quiet. But what I realized is all those years ago when I was told it was unladylike, it was really coming from my father, not my mother. So this is interesting in the process. So how about truth and lies? Can we do a little bit of that here? Well, we're going to try to guess what the lie is.
Oh.
That's, you're not.
So I've written a book.
Okay. Great.
I own a successful business.
Great.
And I have a Havanese dog, which is one who has won Best of Show.
So what does anybody think?
I have a great Havanese dog who sits on the couch and has won nothing.
Good one. Okay, who wants to go next? Hey, Nancy, you just got in here. Well, the question is, can you think about two truths and one lie about your level of success?
And give you a number?
No, just tell us three different items, and we guess which one is a lie.
I'm not sure.
Success is, you know, one of the things about success I haven't really mentioned that I'm going to clarify now is I don't see success as necessarily external. I think it is a combination. If you're not happy with yourself, quite frankly, you can have all the awards and the accolades in the world and not be successful. Because I look at the mental side of things and feel like if people aren't happy in their lives and aren't satisfied with how they're living their life, that doesn't feel successful to me. And I think that's the only difference now at this age. I am happy in my life, and I'm glad, lucky I've been able to stretch myself more. But the real critical thing about success and the people I want to be around, excuse me, who are down to earth, thoughtful, kind, generous, compassionate type of people. And so I want to try to work on being that kind of person. And so that, to me, is certainly success. And the reason the 50K was a success is because my mind was very strong and worked through some physical discomforts. And I actually had a great time because the course was so incredibly beautiful that it was like I was able to experience really most moments in the whole event.
Oh, not there anymore.
Sure.
So where was this? And did you finish running it with a cracked rib?
Yeah.
I've
done this before, Marty. I did this before. You know, I ran the Skyline. If people are familiar in the peninsula, there's Skyline Avenue. There's a race that goes from Skyline to the sea. And it's kind of one of these races where it's like in the middle of the woods like this one. I mean, there was points I could have pulled out of this race, but chose not to.
Is that where the race you just ran was on Skyline?
No. But I ran another one on Skyline, Skyline to the Sea, and at about mile 16, which really was in the middle of nowhere, I fell and cracked some ribs. And all I could think is, oh, I'm here in the middle of nowhere, I might as well keep going. And the guy goes, and I kept thinking in my head, it's only 10 miles. And I had really kind of wanted to get my head back to that, and that's what happened in this race, really, was the fact that I could really enjoy the beauty and surround me. Not to not include the fact that my husband was the most fabulous crew ever. He showed up all along the course and cheered me along and even ran with me at some point, and he's not even a runner. And he gave me the best birthday gift ever to have done that. So, I think success is a whole bunch of different things, but I think it's really important that people keep in track of the internal part of success, because that's the really critical part. Because there's only, in depending on the work we choose, if we choose work that really fits who we are, and I'm fortunate to have been one of those people, then, the whole process feels like I don't want to stop working. Which people go, you what? You don't want to stop working? And I said, no, I really love what I do. Why do I want to stop working? There's no arbitrary time to stop working. So I'll tell you a little story about learning that was I have parents who saved for years to do all this traveling after my dad retired. And he retired, and my mother got metastasized breast cancer and was dead 2 years later. So it taught me probably to live a little too much in the moment, but I've had an incredibly full life, and I'm very grateful for those things. And some were on purpose, and some have been, like, I have to say, nothing has come particularly easy to me in life. I've always really worked hard, but this book just kind of flowed out, and getting venues to talk and radio stations to talk to has been amazing, and being here has been amazing. So I want to talk about female collaborative competition to end our talk today. The key elements, I think, of achieving success, and I think it's one of the things that's missing in the message of education today, is the number one thing that all of us have to be willing to do is to work hard. I run across a number of young people at times that don't realize that you have to work hard. I actually had a client who's in the financial business, worked in a bank, and her idea of working hard was the projects she wanted to do, she would work hard on, and the ones she didn't really work that hard or pay attention to the deadlines, and then she wondered why she'd get bad reviews. And I'd explain to her, you have to work hard with everything that's there. This is not a pick-and-choose kind of deal. So hard work, and when I taught at San Francisco State last spring, I would have half the class showing up, mid-time, and then they're doing bad on tests, and then they'd actually want me to give them A's. I had one young woman that had missed a test, and I said, you miss a test, that tough luck, unless, it's super extenuating circumstances. And so she missed a test, asked for permission to make it up, and we had final day of presentations. I said, so on the final day, stay, and you can take the test. Well, 2 days before, I had an extra credit thing. So came the final day and the presentations, and so it ends, and it's time to take the test. So there's another guy that I was allowing to take the test. And she goes, I did the extra credit. I don't think I'm going to take the test. Well, it made the difference between a D and a C. Then I get an email from her, not understanding why her grade is so bad. I'm like, I just thought in my head. Now, I explained it nicely in the email, but I thought in my head, are you kidding me? You didn't really work as hard as you could have. So I think the other thing is, what does that mean? 10 minutes? Okay. Positive attitude is really important in terms of us. If things don't work out a certain way, you need to pull back, regroup, and try a different way. If you keep trying something and you're not getting anywhere, maybe it's not the right thing for you to be doing. Maybe you need to reevaluate. One of the things I learned about commitment is I used to think commitment was it. You made a commitment to something that was like in cement. And what I've learned about commitment is you commit to things, but if you need to renegotiate that in some way, that's okay too. And persistence is something I can't emphasize enough. I wouldn't have the book that I had out today without the persistence. And being open to feedback, because I had to change my writing from academic to general interest. And that was a very hard process. But I took classes, I went to advanced writers groups, I talked to other writers, and that's was the best advice my husband ever gave me about writing a book was maybe you should hang around more writers and less psychologists. And it really made a difference. So you can see the quote at the bottom. I don't need to read that to you. But talking and bonding, and we have to support, encourage, and push ourselves sometimes. It's not always easy. Writing a book was not an easy thing ever. When I did a dissertation, that was not an easy thing. The things that you challenge yourself to generally aren't just things that fall into place. You do a lot of work before them. Now, I have to say, writing of the book was not so hard. It was all the preparation of interviewing 130 women and talking to male and female coaches and getting connections and talking to one of my idols for years has been this woman, Carol Oglesby, and she is the grandmother of sports psychology. And she doesn't get near the acknowledgement she deserves for that. So my model female collaborative competition is FCC. So it's composed of talking. That's really important for us in terms of having more collaborative competition to talk to each other, to communicate. I mean, I can't believe in this day of computers how people can be in the same office, in the cubicles, and nobody talks to anyone. We have to communicate. We can't just put our verbal stuff aside. Collaboration. How many people watch World Cup? One of the things that was really striking about the Women's World Cup was how well, in that final game, they all worked together. You could just see the tightness. You could see the trust in each other. You could see them make plays where they weren't even, they just knew the other person would get the ball. It was magical. And consequently, one of the excuses for not having women's sports on TV is because it can't get any attention. Well, Women's World Cup is the most watched event, sporting event in the history of television. So that takes that whole theory and throws it out the window. But it's that collaboration. How many people have been in projects with other women and it just came together? Okay. Positive relationships. I know you were talking about positive relationships. I think it's kind of like one of the things in sports is that coaches really need to come with at girls from a more positive than negative angle because we respond a lot more to what should I be doing as opposed to what you haven't done. And you see a lot more of the what you haven't done, you're doing it wrong, blah, blah, blah. And my book is particularly written from a positive of what to do as opposed to what not to do. Embracing competition. One of the things that's funny about using this term is people get upset about it. Because, like, I'm trying to soften it. And there was a criterium I was watching. That's where they do a cycling race where they're going around and around. And three girls were rounding a corner. And one woman was really almost being overly aggressive. So the second woman started yelling at her. And the third woman going, now, we'll have none of that. This is not something men would be doing. So ultimately in my model, girls just want to have fun. And one of the things I liked about this photo is as a team I worked with, Bear Development, a girls racing team, is all the girls are smiling because they're happy. They're out, they're together, they're having a beautiful day. And they're working hard. They're working hard to be on this team, and they're having fun. Now, working lunch, having fun together, successful attitude, I can do, it's kind of like a I can do, and here we go. We can do it. How many people know who this person is? Rosie the Riveter. Yeah. So I have another handout for you. And then I guess, do I have time for any questions, Sandy, or no? Okay. Okay, so the handout I'm handing you now is one of the things the book has. It has strategies in the back for doing things, positive strategies. And so I've chosen a strategy from every chapter because every chapter is about a different kind of relationship that we as women have. So does anybody have questions? Sure. Actually, I haven't heard from you. Yeah.
I really wanted to hear about competition and that question about when there's a sense you feel that if you're being torn down by team members or a stereotype, whatever. I really wanted to hear how do you help people embrace competition? If it seems negative, how do you turn it into something positive? And because I think there's also a training with women. Relationships are everything, so I think like I've probably don't compete because I don't want to make someone feel bad. So how do I bring the best in me and the best in someone else? So that was really the biggest question for me tonight.
Okay. That's a really good question. So reason I use the term embracing competition is because it's really instead of like looking how I'm going to do compared to somebody else, it's more like I want to achieve personal best. So the competing can be against yourself as opposed to against other people. And I think a lot of women, for that very reason, don't want to compete because they don't want to hurt other people's feelings. I once went from like 2 miles behind a woman to almost within 10 or 15 seconds of her, and I didn't want to like pass her because I felt bad. This is at American River, Marty. And sure enough, she was 10th and I was 11th. So it was like I still had something at the end I could have used, but I didn't want to hurt her feelings. And so it was a really big learning experience about just going with the strength I have and going for the best I can do as opposed to necessarily making it against somebody. I think women a lot of times think they're going to hurt other people's feelings, like you said. And I think when you get groups of mean women, I think at work it's trickier because these are the kind of people you kind of try to work a strategy for staying away from. And I think, no, because, I mean, one of the things in sports groups, I just think it's in work groups too, is the bosses are responsible for people getting along. And if people are being that mean and vicious, I think it's a boss's responsibility to take care of their employees so that isn't going on. It's just like in sports groups. One of the things that that's really ill-advised is to criticize or over-accolade a gal in a team. It's much better to take them aside and talk to them even about their achievements. And because the girls like that more sense of being together. And so if you could think of competition as like you're embracing and trying to work towards personal best in whatever it is, whether it's sports or whether it's writing. You know, that was one of the great things about writing this book. I didn't think about I was against anybody. It was just more like, I'm really writing the book, and I want this information to be really good so people can find value in it. And I think we aren't taught, this is one of the reasons I came up with a model where competition is more like a doing personal best thing, because I think women are not taught how to compete as women. We're taught how to compete as men. And how we compete as men is not really what's going to bring us true success. It doesn't mean we don't work hard or push ourselves and do those things, but we also need that bonding. We also need the camaraderie with the other girls at work or in sports. And I don't think we really have enough of that going on, and I'd like to see more of it take place. Because I always believe, when I started my practice in San Francisco, just really quickly, there was like, people were telling me, oh, there's a million psychologists in San Francisco. This is like in 88. You know, you're never going to get established here. So I had a chance for an office that was like $100 a month. So I thought, well, I don't have a lot to risk here. And sure enough, 2 to 3 weeks later, a friend of mine was working in a clinic, and I was specializing in codependency, and this clinic had a codependency wing, and they were closing the clinic, so she just started referring everyone to me. So, like, within 2 weeks, I had a half-time practice. I had, like, 13 clients, and everyone's going, oh, you're never going to make it in San Francisco. And I'm always a feeling that if we all come from abundance, that there's enough around for us all to succeed in whatever we do, we can help create that in our lives and with our friends, whether they be females or males. That we really need to come from that abundance and not from the killer dog-eat-dog kind of world, because that's not what really makes as much sense to us. So, am I over now?
I think we're finished. Thank you so much, Dr. Seidinger, for your work in this area and your presentation tonight. I'd like to say that Romina has some cards, or if you have a business card and you would like to put it in the glass bowl, Dr. Seidinger has given us some of her book bags, and if you'd like to win the raffle and receive one, we'll pass that around right now before we do our final conclusion. This concludes our forum of the Commonwealth Club of California, and the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you very much.